You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
All right, one more hour. Pete Carroll will join me coming up in a half hour. We recorded with Pete early. Actually, we did it live at 6:30 this morning, and because he was just getting off the plane then. We're going to let him get a little sleep, so we'll play that for you coming up in a half hour. There's some good stuff in there, and really interesting conversation about their offense. So Pete Carroll coming up in 30 minutes. Also, Mariners, of course, make their big move yesterday with Robbie Ray. No reason to think they're done. And as much as we heard everything needed to get done yesterday, it sure sounds like things are still progressing in baseball today with some other deals getting done and momentum towards others. So we'll see what happens and if the Mariners can swing at least one more deal before the league appears to be ready to shut down tomorrow night. And talking about the Seahawks, here's basically what I come up with. We've been arguing and debating and going back and forth for what feels like forever. One person blames the players and one person blames the coaching and then others on the scheme. And there's a whole nother group that says they haven't drafted well. And some saying Russell and some saying Pete. And you know what? I'm done. I'm done with that debate. It may come up again here at the end of the year as at some point they got to figure out what they want to do moving forward and whether changes need to be made. Fine. But I see four things happening all at the same time. All are true. Four things. One, this team does not have enough talent. Most weeks they're outmatched. Most weeks they don't have as much talent as the team on the other side of the field. They've missed too often in the draft. I know all GMs aren't perfect in the draft, but we are going on a decade here with really only one good draft in there, the year they got Tyler Lockett and Clark, Frank Clark. DK Metcalf's a good pick. There have been some good picks in there. Of course, there are. Over 10 years, they would have
drafts
to be.
Drafts as a whole.
But overall, they haven't hit on really any blue chippers other than the three players I just mentioned in a decade. That talent gap is catching up with them, and when you start looking at the top guys they pick, there's just too many misses in there. There's too many Malik McDowells. There's too many LJ Colliers. There's too many Rashad Pennies. There's just too many of those guys that aren't living up to what you need them to do, and that talent gap is an issue, I think, week by week. So, yeah, by the way, throw in some of the free agency misses. Throw it. There's a lot. The Seahawks don't have as much talent as you would want them to be a playoff or even more a Super Bowl contender. But that's not the only problem. There are issues with scheme. The scheme's not that good. Offensively, you watched that game yesterday. They look like they didn't have a clue how to operate. There's obviously some issues in terms of scheme. If you need help pointing at a specific, how about their two-point conversion attempt? What was that?
I go back to your point of...
What even was that play?
Getting the ball to your biggest playmakers at the biggest moments.
You couldn't get the ball to DK Metcalf for an entire three quarters. You finally threw him the ball a couple times in the fourth. But where is the interesting scheme? There's obviously problems with the identity and the scheme and running and throw. You're just talking about the passing. Their running game is bizarre. It doesn't do anything. Some of that is because your offensive line's not good, but that can't be all of it. There have to be some sort of issues there in the way this thing is schemed and the types of plays they run. And while I'm not certainly capable of diagnosing that myself, the people I talk to who understand the game and played the game at the highest level point to it and say it's too simple. They're not scheming anybody open, whether it's in the running game or the passing game. So yeah, scheme versus talent, both. The answer is yes. Both things are problematic. Pete versus Russ, yes, because my third thing is your quarterback. Quarterback's not playing well. And it's not just the finger. He hasn't played well for a year. This has not been Russell Wilson that we've watched for going on a year now. I don't know what the issue is. I'm going to guess once again that it's not a matter of either or. It's a matter of and. I think he's hurt. I think his finger is still hurt. I think that's affecting his accuracy. And I think there's a confidence issue. He seems to be in between. And he seems unhappy. He didn't seem like, you know, your typical Russell Wilson.
Saw Brock Sweet about that last night.
He doesn't look like he's having a good time.
Yeah.
And I think he's missing some of the guidance he's always gotten. I don't think it's wrong to point to the fact that his mental skills coach and really good friend and confidant, Trevor Moad, passed away at the beginning of this season. I think all of those things are affecting Russell Wilson. All of them are true. So start looking through this. Outmatched talent-wise, yes. Scheme that is problematic, yes. Quarterback suffering from a combination of issues, yes. And the fourth thing I'll add to this, and by the way, it's not a negative, it's a positive. Teams fighting hard. They're fighting really hard. Their defense out there busting their tail. Like, they were good yesterday,
42 minutes.
They're out there for 42 minutes, and it was not their fault that that was the case. They played well. They're scrappy. They survive, right? They're out there doing everything they can. Special teams is working hard. Even the offense, as bad as they looked, it's not for lack of trying. Pete is a great leader. A great leader of men. And that team has not quit on him. So any of this talk of, oh, fire Pete. Hey, that team supports him, man. That group of players is playing hard every week for Pete Carroll. So it's not simple, but it is all-encompassing. All of these things are true. I don't want to keep fighting about, is it scheme, is it talent, is it coach, is it quarterback? Because the answer is yes. It's all of those things. I was on, they had me on one of the stations in D.C. yesterday, and they were asking me questions. And my God, some of the things I was saying, I was like, geez. They're like, man, you're really kind of down on the Seahawks. Like, yeah, they don't look really good right now. And then they showed it last night. Their offense was abysmal. I honestly think their offense looked worse last night than it did against Green Bay when they were shut out.
Yeah.
It's true. Other than that final drive, they honestly looked worse throughout most of the game. They just looked like they had no clue.
They had five first downs, I think, until the end of the fourth quarter.
It really was challenging. So I don't know what comes next. That's going to be what gets determined here over the course of these next couple of weeks leading up to the end of this season. I said it, and I've said it a few times. I'll say it again. It's hard for me to imagine everybody who's a major character here returns, but I know that Pete knows how to be a leader. That hasn't gone away. I know that Russell Wilson knows how to throw, and I know that Russell Wilson knows how to play quarterback. I don't think that has gone away either. I do think it's going to take somebody above them to work this out and figure out how to get everybody in the right spot to succeed. That's the goal of management, right? Can you put everybody in their best position to succeed? It's hard to do, trust me. Anybody who works in management knows how hard it can be to put people in their best spot to have their most amount of success. But that's what they need to do. They got to put Pete in the right position to succeed with the right coaches underneath him. You got to put Russ in the best position to succeed, not what he thinks it is, but what it actually is. You got to get your personnel in the best position to succeed. All of that needs to happen. And they got to figure it out before next season, before this offseason, what direction it is they want to go. Because what we're seeing right now, problematically, it's not an either. It's a yes. It's an all of the above. All of these things right now are challenging. We'll tell you everything you need to know, and then you'll hear from Pete coming up in 20 minutes. Don't go anywhere. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
The White Zombie probably works for Mariners, sorry, for Seahawks fans today. Mariners fans a whole lot more excited. Robbie Ray already in the building. Adam Frazier traded for as well, and I think there's still a lot more to come for this team this offseason, and hopefully a big-name bat to come and play a corner infield spot.
Those pants.
Got Pete Carroll coming up in 15 minutes. Right now, let's tell you what you need to know.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Yeah, it sure wasn't pretty last night. The Seahawks did manage a couple touchdowns in the game, but that was not an NFL-caliber offense, let alone one featuring an elite franchise quarterback, some of the better weaponry in the league. Instead, what we saw was rancid. Seahawks lose 17-15 in Washington, fall to 3-8 on the year. They've lost three straight. They've lost 6 of 7. The results are one thing, but honestly, it's the way it looked last night that was another. We've seen them get beat. We've seen them get dominated. We've seen what happens when an elite defensive line just suffocates them and there's nothing they can do. The Rams have done that to them. We've seen it. We've seen what that looks like. We've seen when they beat themselves, when they turn the ball over, when they make mistakes, when they can't get substitutions correct. But what we saw last night was just completely lost. They looked like they didn't really have any answers, and that's why it felt like so much of it fell in the coaching staff that couldn't design an offense capable of getting the ball to its playmakers, and a lot of it fell on the quarterback, who couldn't choose open receivers, and then when he found them, often was missing high and wide. That's not who Russell Wilson has been in his career. It's foundation-shaking to see him look like this. And while I believe the finger injury is definitely a part of it, the scheme and the newness of it still has to be a part of it. They don't explain everything. I talked to Pete Carroll this morning and asked him what was going on with the passing game and specifically what else Shane Waldron could do to make it better.
We, like I said, we were open, you know. We got open on plays, and so we were there available. And that means that the call, the scheme, the prep, all that stuff, guys were where they needed to get, and we needed to just find our way to convert. I don't know that we drop any balls tonight. I don't remember, you know, not catching a football, you know, and we didn't get any balls knocked down, over at the line of scrimmage. So there's a, we just need to come through and convert, and everybody needs to contribute to that.
You can hear the rest of that interview coming up here in about 15 minutes. I don't think anyone knows for sure what we're watching and why it's turned so far south, but it doesn't look like anything we're familiar with, and it's really hard for me to imagine that all of the major players are all going to be back next year.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Welcome to Seattle, Robbie Ray.
Swing and a miss, he got him. 14 strikeouts for Robbie Ray. He strands two base runners. What a performance by Robbie Ray. Now the Blue Jays need to get him a run.
Yeah, the Mariners did more than dip their toe into the free agent waters. They signed the reigning AL Cy Young Award winner. He was their top pitching target, and he gets a five-year deal worth $115 million. Just turned 30, so he'll be ages 30 through 34 during the course of this deal. Likely to be pretty good years for a pitcher of his caliber. And look, he's been really, really good. He's always been a solid pitcher, but last year he became great after some mechanical changes. Led the league with a 2.84 ERA, had 248 strikeouts, whip just over one. All those led the league. Really impressive numbers, and it should make him their top starter. Listen to Dan O'Dowd, who used to be the general manager in Colorado, now works for MLB Network. He likes everything the Mariners have done so far.
They're positioned perfectly. They got a great young core that they developed through the organization. They got a ton of payroll flexibility. Adam Frazier deal for me complemented their lineup perfectly. Now they've got a horse in the middle to the top of their rotation, which sets up the other pitchers in it. I mean, Robbie Ray was great last year, Fran. He pitched innings. He had dominant innings. He figured something out. It's going to be, can he maintain that and carry it forward now with the Mariners? If he does, their starting rotation lines up very well right now.
Yeah, I really like this deal, and the new rotation likely is Ray, Marco, Logan Gilbert, Chris Flexen, and then we'll see what happens with that fifth spot. Could it be one of the kids, George Kirby, Matt Brash, maybe? Or could they go out and still spend more money? And I think they absolutely can and should. Maybe it's a back-end guy like Tyler Anderson, who was here last year. Or maybe they go big and bring in Stroman to complement this. There's no downside to bringing in more pitching. They know they need more hitting, though, and I would think that's where their attention is right now. Whether it's Chris Bryant, Chris Taylor, Trevor Story, there are options. The Mariners need production in their infield, and those guys are still available.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Big announcement yesterday. Washington Huskies have hired Kalen DeBoer. He'll be their newest head coach. Signs a deal. He's been at Fresno State for the last few years. Offensive-minded guy and, you know, gets a lot of credit for turning around the career of Jake Haener, who did nothing while here at UW. Before that, he was the OC at Indiana, had a lot of success there with their offense as well. So he's got a lot to accomplish. He's going to be forced to restore respect there on Montlake, not to mention installing a modern offense that will entice his current quarterback, Sam Heward, and others to stick around, and then build a recruiting base that right now is outside the top 50. So he's got a lot of work ahead of him. I don't know yet whether he's the right hire. I don't think only time will tell. But while Oregon's playing for the Pac-12 championship and USC just hired a proven commodity in Lincoln Riley, there's no doubt that DeBoer is not as splashy nor as proven. Kraken get another road win, this time 7-4 over Buffalo. Two goal nights for Jared McCann and Mason Appleton. Tanev, Soucy, and Schwartz pitched in as well with goals. Two straight starts, two straight wins for Chris Drieger, who played pretty well, I thought, in net. They'll play tomorrow in Detroit. One bad note from last night. Unfortunately, Jordan Eberle may miss some time here with what is termed a lower body injury. That's the norm in hockey. You just get upper or lower body injuries.
Jeez.
They don't have ankles. They don't have knees. They don't have hamstrings or anything like that. You just have upper or lower body. Yeah. Or sometimes core, I think.
All right.
That's everything you need to know.
More big news coming to T-Mobile Park.
Oh.
The announcement just made this morning. Foo Fighters returning.
Jeez.
Saturday, August 13th, 2022.
Are they just basically doing a residency here in Seattle?
I know, it feels like it. Priority presale begins Thursday, December 2nd at noon.
Okay.
And they're also doing it to raise some money for the Emergency Relief Fund to preserve independent live music venues.
Nice. All right.
Which also coincides perfectly with the Seattle's brand new The Crocodile opening tomorrow.
I saw that. So where did The Crocodile move?
It's in the old El Gaucho location, which is down on First Avenue. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Kitty corner from like Belltown Pizza, Cyclops.
Oh, interesting. And what is where the old Crocodile was? Like
Nothing right now. Yeah, I think it's just going to be developed or turned.
Interesting. Oh, that's cool. Is it going to be sweet?
Oh, it's awesome.
I like the old Crocodile.
Three big rooms. It's still good. The big theater is going to turn into a room. It's got a 17-room hotel built into it.
Really?
It is fancy.
The first night we met Justin, I was on my way to The Crocodile.
That's
to
right.
To go see a show.
I remember that.
There you go. All right, let's see. We got Pete Carroll coming up next. Had a chance to talk with him early this morning as he was getting off the plane. And Pete, look, it's Pete. You know, you know some of what you're going to get in terms of his optimism and positivity, but layered in there, I think, is some very interesting criticism of his team and some very real raw thoughts about what they need to do to move forward. Stick around. Pete Carroll's next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
The Mariners are making moves. First word from the Seahawks head coach every Monday at 9:30 with Mike Salk. Brought to you by Pizza Hut on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Well, and here we are with Coach Carroll. Coach, good morning. Thanks for jumping on after a long flight and a long night, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, we're here for you, Mike.
Well, I appreciate that. What, you know, in general, what happened yesterday?
Well, you know, it's a little bit more of the same that we've seen, you know, kind of the big numbers and stuff, you know, the time of possession stuff and the third down stuff that's been showing up. It's really amazing to me that I thought they played really well and did things, you know, with kind of a good continuity for themselves. And they were fortunate to get out of there, you know. you look at the whole thing, all the stuff that we can talk about on our side, and then all the stuff you'd be talking about the positive on the other side, and it's a two-point ball game and really – I know they didn't have their kicker and stuff. That's a little bit of a differential there for them. But as it was all came down, it was right down to the nub of it. And we really felt like we were going to win the game, you know, and maybe not deserving it or something in some sense. But, we were right there, you know, for a lot of good reasons, you know, because the things that happened on the defensive side and the guys kept the score down and kept hanging tough. Meanwhile, we're kind of waiting on the offense to get rolling.
Well, let's start there. Let's start with your defense. We'll come back around to the offense here in a minute. But what has been the mentality of this defense?
They're really striving to capture, you know, our mentality, which is aggressive and play to the nature of our guys, and let Bobby and Brooksy do their thing, and Quandre and Jamal do their thing, and the big guys in the middle, you know, just play off of all of that and count on that to be a winning formula for us. And, you know, it was I think that we were playing well enough that we could have really had a big night on defense. And we just needed the help from the O, that would have made a difference. You know, we just needed some more drives to happen, and we need fewer plays because we played a lot of really good stuff last night.
What was the vibe of this game for you as you're going through? I mean, did the team feel, did it feel like one of these close games you've described where you feel like you're in it all the way? You mentioned that, you know, maybe you, quote, didn't quite deserve it. Did it feel like it was getting away from you, but the scoreboard wasn't? Was there a desperation with this team trying to hang on to a playoff spot?
Like, I don't know, we didn't deserve it. I don't know if that, maybe I just said that, but I don't know if that's the way I would phrase it. We played really tough. We had so many big hits in this game. So many individual guys had huge hits in the game that just showed how everybody was connected, you know, and we were playing physically. I'm talking about the defensive now. And in special teams also, you know, that was what you saw. And it was kind of highlighted the performance. We were in it the whole time. Yeah, it was one of those games we were in it the whole time. And as here we are with the chance, you know, if we just stop them at the end there, we'll get a shot at it, and sure enough, that's exactly how it went. And we put together that, you know, that fantastic last drive from the 4-yard line, and we're there. Even when in a drive that was challenged too, we got sacked in the drive. We didn't hit everything, you know, and still the clock, no timeouts. We just did a really, the kind of job that we were used to doing. And Russ got us down the field, and guys made the catches, and the protection was enough. And we took a big sack in that drive too, that usually could cancel you out, but it didn't. So there was a continued sense of believing, Mike, and our guys really feel like we're going to win the game. And we're not happy with the way it's going. We know it could be different, but that nature, that makeup of the guys in that locker room is really special, and it's really why it's so frustrating that we're not receiving, you know, more of the fun and all the good stuff that comes with winning.
Coach, how would you assess Russ's night?
I think we saw Russ, you know, make some incredible plays and throws, and then some throws that are really routine for him not be completed. And there was, he missed the first third down play when the ball took off on him, and there was a couple other ones on third down situations where really we didn't need to do anything different. We just needed to throw and catch it. And I think we're seeing him, you know, he's got his feeling for throwing the football and all that, but there's plays that are getting away from us, you know, three or four plays in that game that really are normal plays for him to make. And so and the hard part about that is during the week, we're seeing him throw the ball great and all that. And in the game, you know, there's, for one reason or another, it's just not as clean as we need to be. We need to protect better. We need to keep the guys out of his chops right in front of him a couple times. We got knocked back and so that he has the room to throw. But that's what I've just seen him hit more stuff, you know, and that's just what's a little uncommon about it.
Yeah, I think we're all wondering about the accuracy. I mean, that's something that is one of his specialties. One of the things that has made Russ as great as he's been here for the last decade. Is it finger? Is it finger related in terms of it? You know, him not being able to grip it. Is it mentality?
I don't know that, Mike. I can't tell you that because he feels fine and he feels great. That's how he's. He's felt during the week, and also there's fantastic touch plays, you know, down the field and on the move and on the big plays, you know, to Tyler again. That's the last couple weeks. He's had gorgeous throws, you know, and so I do feel like some of the throws that he drives, you know, when he's throwing the ball right on the line and kind of the darts that he's got to throw in there. But look at the touchdown pass. It was freaking great, you know. So that there's just that little bit that's not as clean as it's been, and we just got to keep helping them. We got to keep doing things, and you know, we'll try to get guys more open and all that. But really, we just got to throw and catch it and make our stuff happen. And our guys got to come through when the time comes, because there's the margin for error is very slight when we're not as complete as we've been. We didn't run the ball well tonight, you know, and we did block some plays well, but there just wasn't enough of them and enough to build on. And that is all part of what the scheme is. I think for the fans, it was pretty clear. You could see how they were able to play against us. They dinked the ball around a little bit. They had three explosive plays in the game, you know, out of all those plays. We had four out of those few plays, you know, and they were able to run the football with enough to keep it going. They averaged 3.5 yards a carry, which we would think was not a successful night of running the football, you know. But because of the opportunities, I think they showed you that's what we're kind of used to seeing. And it's a good winning formula. But, man, the margin was really slight the way it went.
You mentioned last night that after the game, Russell was, what, quietly accountable, I believe was your phrase, so that he spoke quietly and took accountability for what happened last night. How? What does that mean? What does that look like?
He just said, you know, he's got to play better to him, and he told him. He said, I got to do better, and guys know. They don't have to say a lot. It's not a lot of words. It's just the sincerity and the care, you know, that he brought to it. It was, you know, it was heartfelt, and he's doing everything you can do. He's doing everything you can do. He's staying up late. He's getting up early. He's practicing hard. He's staying after practice. He's getting the reps, the whole thing. He's doing everything he can do. And that's – everybody should understand that. That's really clear. And we're seeing the work ethic, you know, during the week that he has, and he's doing everything possible to be there for us. And he, you know, just wants to just be a little bit better. We need to be better around him. We need to block a little better, all that stuff to complement, you know, what he's doing, because everybody's working hard. And that's what makes it so difficult, you know, because we're putting in a spirited, upbeat, forward thinking focus to work every week, you know, and that's it's been common for us, and that's the only way we know how to do it. So it's really frustrating that we're not getting the results.
Coach, we talked last week a little bit about Shane Waldron, and you said he was in the midst of everything. At this point, what can he do as the offensive coordinator to help improve this offense?
Well, you know, we like I said, there was we were open, you know. we got open on plays, and so we were there available, and that means that the call, the scheme, the prep, all that stuff, guys were where they needed to get, and we needed to just find our way to convert. I don't know that we drop any balls tonight. I don't remember, you know, not catching a football, you know, and we didn't get any balls knocked down, over at the line of scrimmage. So there's we just need to come through and convert, and everybody needs to contribute to that.
Just so I understand, and you know, just trying to understand the role of the coordinator and what that job entails. What is the primary responsibility of a coordinator?
It's orchestrating the whole effort. You know, it's everything. It's making sure that, you know, all of the process is well organized in gathering the information, making the choices and the decisions as we put together a plan. Utilizing the coaches and what they have, utilizing the players and what they have to offer, and it's like the word, the coordinator, you know, bring all of that together, and then he has to execute the game and get out there and call the thing in accordance with how we prepared it, and hopefully it's in sync and it makes sense and you know, we didn't go off the rails in some direction that we didn't prepare for, and you know, we're not doing that. We're doing the game plans the way we'd like to do them. We're looking at the opportunities the way we want to look at them, and we have to adapt. He has to adapt to what's happening as we see the week unfold. He has to adapt what's happening in the game. All of that is what is called upon for the guys that are making the calls.
You mentioned the last drive there, and the success that you guys had in the 2-minute drill. Is there something there to build on? Is that momentum? I mean, when you turn back to the team and now that you've watched the film, do you focus on some of the positive and say, you know, it's in there, obviously, somewhere?
Yes. Yeah, the answer is yes to that. We're going to show these guys what they're capable of always, and so that we can keep reminding them, you know, and so that we know who we are and what we're doing, what we can count on. I mean, we've been a terrific 2-minute team for years, you know, and that's never not been a strength. And so for us to do that, like Russ said to me as he's heading out, you know, we've done this before. You know, that was the last thing he said as he went into the huddle, and which is the typical positive outlook that, you know, that he's maintained for, you know, a long, long time. And that's the confidence, you know. Well, you know, one of the things is, Mike, when you try to figure out who you are, and then when you know who you are, then you try to bring that to the party, you know, there's an old saying we got that we learned from Rick Barry from a million years ago. You know, if you know you're a great shooter and you miss your first 10 shots, look out. You know, and that's kind of how we operate. And so we're still in that lookout. You know, it hasn't turned yet. And so we keep believing, and that's how we battle. And that's kind of at the root of all of the mentality that keeps us coming back.
I know the running game is important to you, and the circle of toughness and the way the philosophy works together. You mentioned a few minutes ago that it wasn't great last night. What does that need to get going, that portion of your game?
Well, we need more turns. We just need more reps. We need more opportunities, you know, because we're running the play passes and stuff off of it, even though we haven't had a lot of turns, you know, to get successful. You got to make first downs. You make first downs, you get more chances, you get to keep calling them, you know, and like I said, look at the illustration that we saw from the other team. They ran the ball 43 times last night, and they averaged 3 yards, 3.5 yards a carry. Well, that gives you the rhythm that allows you to set up the passes and the play passes and the opportunities to make the big plays that are, you know, the big guns can make outside. I think it's interesting too that it's kind of coming out. I've heard a couple different commentaries about, you know, there's a lot of teams that are being successful right now. They're running the football well. Well, there was a time a couple of years ago that, you know, or maybe it's always been the case since we've been here, that people questioned, you know, my commitment to the running game. Well, that's never changed, and it's because the game isn't different in that regard. Oh, everybody's got to throw for 400 yards a game. No, you don't. You got to win, you know, and you got to do the things right so that you have the chance to do that. And the running game is at the heart of all of that for many reasons. We don't need to go into all that, but I don't think the illustration could be more obvious, and that's we're always shooting for that kind of balance.
Is it, you know, as you try to figure out what's going on there? You mentioned that it's not enough reps, but you know, at some point, is it line related? Is it running back related? I mean, is it scheme related or creativity? You know, what can you point to say, hey, if this was working better, the running game would work better?
Well, I do think that when you have your lead dog running back, that it makes a difference, and it makes a difference on how you, you know, in every aspect of the complementary part of the running game and the passing game, you know, and you go back to when, and I don't want to make a big excuse that Chris isn't here, but Chris has been that guy for us. And we've always hoped that Rashad Penny will come through and be that guy for us. And we've had a 1-2 thought for a lot of years. And we're seeing Alex do everything he can to try to help us out. And we mixed in DJ a little bit tonight. But go back to the image of what it was like back in the day, you know, when we were putting this program together, and Marshawn was such a big part of it. That was it. It wasn't all that he did. It was just the fit of it all. And you know, when that guy's there, you give him the ball because he's that guy, man. And that's what Chris always has been. And so it seems to me that we haven't been able to get back into that kind of groove where the play caller knows he's got that guy that we can keep pounding away, and sticking with it is the right thing to do. And so we're trying to develop our guys to become that, but it just has, that's the sense you have when you do know what you got. And I think it was really clear. I thought their guy, you know, Gibson was really good tonight, and he was really sharp. And then they went 1-2 punch with McKissick, and they had a real nice rhythm with those guys, which they have had for about a month of their season now, and it's made them come to life.
Big news in the last couple days here with Lincoln Riley heading to USC. Do you reach out when there's a new USC coach? Do you talk to those guys? Is that part of like being USC coach emeritus?
Well, no, I haven't talked to Lincoln. You know, I met Lincoln when he came and visited us a couple years ago, but I've really had, you know, high regard for what he's done, and you know, whenever I had kind of any opportunity to talk about him and what I thought of him, you know, I did, you know, so I think that's a great hire for them. I think he's a marvelous, young, vibrant dude that's going to do a really nice job. He's got his act together, and he's got a lot that he brings with him, and they recognize that, and they went after it, you know, and you know, you got to give him credit. They went for one of the highest kind of touted guys in the country, and they talked to a number of candidates, I'm sure, and to get Lincoln to go to the Trojan program, that's a big deal for them.
It's probably good for the conference also, right? To have you, when USC is good, the Pac-12 is usually good.
Well, that's kind of how we thought. Yeah. So it's good. It's really good. And you know, there's a lot of success to be had there. You know, obviously we know that, and I wish him the very best.
Coach, it dawns on me that a couple times you've said tonight and talking about the game, which means you obviously haven't slept yet. So most of us have had the opportunity to sleep and all of that. I know Russ has no time for it, but maybe at some point you'll get a chance to catch a few minutes. We'll let you go. We appreciate you coming right in off the plane, and we'll talk next week.
You got it, Michael. I appreciate you getting up early, too.
No, Coach, I do it every day. I have to get up. This is my job. I have to wake up at this time. It's terrible. Let's switch jobs.
Okay. You want to try this one, huh?
Well, I got some ideas. I mean, you know, I'm happy. It starts with Big Nickel, as you know. It's always Big Nickel for me.
There you go.
Coach, thank you. We'll talk next week.
Big Nickel showed up this week.
I know. Ryan Neal's been pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
You laughed at me about Big Nickel, and now you use it all the time. I just figure you got it from me.
It was because of the distance you had from really understanding what you were saying.
That's pretty much every day. There's no reason to limit that just to the Big Nickel.
All right. Well, you're on. We finally heard you.
All right, Coach. Thanks. We appreciate it. There you go. There's Pete Carroll taking some time, jumping right off the plane to talk this morning. Yeah, that's Pete. We did it early, 6:30, because they came right off. We hear him say tonight a few times. Just like, jeesh. Poor guy, like he's breaking down film on the plane ride home and all that. And I know nobody's going to have any sympathy for him today based on the way the team played, nor should they. But yeah.
One takeaway.
What, Big Nickel?
He gave you an L.
Okay, who's calling me a loser?
Yeah, he gave me a bit of an L.
It's because of the distance you have between what you...
That was a real great line.
I don't understand what I don't understand. All I said was throw three safeties out there. It's the Big Nickel. And Pete's like, oh, Big Nickel's ridiculous. Well, now they run it all the time, and he even refers to it as the Big Nickel. So whatever. It's fine. it's really more like Big Dime when you get him in there. But they're all safeties. Anyway, a lot there from Pete. A few things that we've been talking about throughout the day. And, you know, look, Pete's a positive guy. Right? I mean, like, you hear Pete, and he is optimistic. He will believe that his team is getting better. He will continue to look like he sees that game last night as it was close right until the end. He's not wrong.
Yeah.
It was close right until the end. So when Pete sees the game, it was close. We were right in it. We had a chance to win that game. I think that's easy it's easy to do what we all do, which is, what are you talking about? Like, you weren't in that game. Score-wise, maybe, but I watched, and your team did not look like they were on the same field as Washington. And his response, I think correctly, would be, well, you're only looking at half the game. The other half of the game, we were really good. Despite being on the field for 42 minutes, my offense was out there doing, or defense rather, was out there doing its thing. They limited their points. They got the ball back. They were good on third downs. They hit hard. They caused a turnover. There was a lot to like about what the Seahawks defense did in that game. And Pete will absolutely see that just as much as he sees what they did on the offensive side of the ball, or rather didn't do. It is interesting, though, obviously, that when you ask him about their offensive coordinator and what he can do to help, he points to not the coordinator, but the quarterback. Hey, I got guys open. Someone's got to hit them.
And maybe you can get them more open.
Maybe we can get them more open in order to help them. You know, no one's willing to say Russell's finger is still hurt. I don't know why necessarily. Maybe they don't want to make an excuse. Maybe it really isn't. But
I want to make Dr. Shen look bad.
Yes. Well, Dr. Shen. Dr. Stephen Shin, right? S-H-I-N. I don't know who they're protecting, but clearly Russell does not look like himself. Clearly, I think his finger is still bothering him. So, yeah, I Pete will be positive, and that's fine. Pete also, I think, was very clear about the fact that his quarterback was not playing the way he needs to, whether it's the accuracy or the decision-making. Both of them seem to be problematic. And yet, you see what he's still capable of in the two-minute drill. You see what he's still capable of when he gunned the ball in there for that first touchdown to Gerald Everett. So there's still something in there from Russell Wilson, right? So the question is, can they get more of it, obviously, and at the same time keep their defense playing at this kind of level? If they do those things, they're actually not a bad team. It's just too late, unfortunately, for them to make the playoffs. Like, there's just too many teams ahead of them. They've dug themselves too deep a hole and done it in the wrong season because, you know, that's wide open this year. To not make the playoffs with an extra team in this year and with all of the mediocrity in the NFC, is it truly drives home how bad they are. Man, they've lost 6 of 7. They've lost 3 straight and 6 of 7. When you say that out loud, I mean, doesn't that hammer it home? You are what your record says it is, and we watched them. Like, we saw it with our eyes last night. I think that's what makes it so hard. And look, we have to be critical. It is up to us, I think, as fans and as media members to have our teams holding a level of accountability. We can also be thankful for the last decade of what we've seen. I mean, Justin, you pointed out, what was the story of that person complaining about the Helivac or whatever it was?
Yeah, it was a person who was upset that at 4 a.m. and a helicopter went over their house. It was a rescue mission. They're talking about how terrible and loud it was and how inconsiderate they were.
How inconsiderate they were to rescue somebody by flying a helicopter over their home. And, you know, I don't want to be that as Seahawks fans. I think we should recognize how great the last decade has been. Seriously, it has been great, don't you think?
Yeah, there's no question.
We have enjoyed unparalleled success in this city over the course of the last 10 years and enjoyed every second of it. Man, it's been a blast. But when you hear Brock say the season's over, when you hear John Clayton come on and say the season's over, they're right in terms of making the playoffs, but they're wrong in terms of nothing is over. I mean, you still got to play it out. You still got to find out how these guys can work together. You still got to figure out what you're going to do next year. With Pete Carroll, John Schneider, and Russell Wilson, 3 biggest characters in this drama, can all 3 of them return for another go? Can all of them continue to coexist? Can all of them continue to do what they've been doing for the last 10 years as things have been slowly slipping? Do you think this is an aberration, or do you think that this is something that has been building, or rather what's the opposite of building? Slowly letting itself,
regressing.
You know, regressing. That's the right word. Thank you,
deteriorating.
Justin. To this point. I think those are very real questions, and you've got now, 6 games to figure that out? 6 games to determine whether or not your 3 main characters in the story are coming back for a sequel, or whether or not you've got to find some new ones. Whether or not you've got to find, and I don't know whether it's 1, 2, 3. Like, you got to determine how to move forward. We talked a lot about the things that are right with this team and the things that are wrong, and there are both. But we got to be honest about them. We got to recognize that two things can be problematic at the same time. You can have scheme issues and you can have talent issues. One does not necessarily mean the other doesn't exist, and that you can have good with bad. You can have problems with your scheme and still have an unbelievable ability to lead your team. That's what these next 6 weeks are going to be about, and they're going to be fascinating. Absolutely fascinating to see what the future of this franchise goes. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. I'm sure Jake is ready to come in and talk quite a bit about this. I'm looking forward to listening to that myself. We'll catch you guys tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. Until then, see you.